This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next is More Talk Radio with hosts Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Their guests are Lori Wintergreen from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Karen Fisher Gray, East Portland Action Plan Communications Chairperson, to talk about the East Portland Action Plan.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here today with our co-host, Celeste Carey. And we welcome you on this Monday morning. Again, I would like to thank all of you who participated by either joining or renewing your membership here at KBOO Portland. As you know, this is a community volunteered center operation, which depends on the insight, devotion, and dollars of all of you. So thank you for contributing and for making an investment in our community's future. This morning on More Talk Radio, we would like to continue our discussions about our communities. Today, we will continue talking about our city here in Portland. Specifically, we will look at East Portland and the issues that confront that part of our habitat. East Portland has a population of over 125,000 and growing daily. It composed 13 neighborhoods and 5 business districts, and it is a unique and important part of our community. Joining us this morning are Lori Wintergreen, who is the East Portland Action Plan Advocate of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and she is located in the East Portland Neighborhood Office, which is located where?
At 1117.
Holiday. Is it? No,
no,
117.
It's 117.
Right.
No. Great.
So it's between Halsey and Gleason on 117th.
On Holiday and 117th in the lovely former Hazelwood District Water Building?
It's right under the water tower. So if you see the water tower, you'll know where our office is.
Excellent. Excellent. And we hope that also joining us shortly, it will be Karen Fisher Gray, who is with the East Portland Action Plan Communication Chair, and she's also the Park Row School District Superintendent.
All right. Well, the first thing we want to do, as Cecil said, is welcome you here. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to talk a little bit about the motivation behind the East Portland Action Plan. As Cecil has said, it's a very thriving part of Portland. I actually lived in East Portland pretty much most of the time I've lived here. I only recently moved into town, mostly because the commute got to be a bit much. And whether you're doing it by bike or max or by a vehicle, after a while, your time is eaten up by waiting. You want to think, I'll take advantage of it. But I put a lot on some really deep roots there. I had a chance to serve on a few civic committees. And one of the things that you find out there is a fierce pride and determination to make things work. There are a lot of little diverse communities that have come together. Some of them are now called Portland. Some of them still maintain their own identity, like I think it's Maywood City, mm-hmm. for example. But what was the motivation for the action plan, and did you find in having people come together, kind of coalesce together to start their work, that the individual concerns, individual community concerns were kind of shed for a greater vision of what East Portland could be?
Well, what was exciting for me, and I just started this work in July, so the action plan had been created through the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability with Barry Manning staffing it, and he worked with several community members. It was convened by then-Mayor Potter, Ted Wheeler from Multnomah County, and Jeff Merkley, who at the time was Speaker of the Oregon House of Representatives. And they brought together community members and to look at the issue of East Portland, which is basically east of I-205 as a shortcut, and then covering the borders north and south and then all the way to Gresham. It was growing really fast. And a lot of people moving to East Portland for several reasons. It had been a semi-rural community, it had been until, I believe, in the 80s, basically part of Multnomah County, not mm-hmm. part of the city of Portland.
Right.
So it hadn't developed the infrastructure that you see in the city of Portland. Very poor sidewalk and road network.
And lighting.
And lighting. And
mass transit.
And mass transit and actually transit in general. Not a strong suit out in East Portland. So it is, a lot of it was called out in East Portland. Mm-hmm. We try to call it East Portland now because it is not. It is a part of Portland, and it's a part that needs to be claimed by Portland and not treated as sort of the disenfranchised extended family. It's part of Portland, and it's part of the city that we need to all claim and incorporate. Part of the concern is that East Portland has served the function, especially as gentrification has happened in other neighborhoods, and then for especially immigrant refugee community members to provide affordable housing mm-hmm. and a place where people can still be in Portland but can afford to live with families and family housing. Now, that is certainly maxed, especially the David Douglas School District, Centennial and Reynolds School Districts. Park Rose has stayed fairly stable mm-hmm. in numbers, but the others have really climbed, and the ability to serve those students, and they're serving them very well, which is exciting. So maybe having more students isn't so bad if we can only provide them with the facilities and funding to be able to serve the students. East Portland is, when you're looking at all those factors and you're saying, okay, it's the traditional underservice, sort of disenfranchised community, and yet we have the highest number of immigrant refugee population. We're getting more and more people of color mm-hmm. And more low-income people. And much of the housing being built with an idea of penciling out the bottom line, how am I going to make money off of this, mm-hmm. by independent contractors, mm-hmm. by for-profit contractors. The housing doesn't meet general standards in terms of what we would want to see for families. So you won't see sidewalks around some of the housing, and yet you won't see play areas for the children either. Uh-huh. So they have really no way to get out and get to a park and walk, and the parks are fewer in East Portland, and fewer of them are developed. And all those things coming together, the community came together and said social services hadn't followed the community out there yet. And yet mm-hmm. the numbers were 25% of the population of Portland. So all those shifts said it's time for us to look at the need for schools, for social services, for transportation, for infrastructure, for housing standards, for design standards, and really look at East Portland and embrace them in some of the standards that other people in Portland have got to normalize.
Could you share something about the development? I understand you were not a part of it initially, mm-hmm. the East Portland Action Plan, but how people were gathered together and how this plan was developed over a period of time and eventually accepted.
And it went fairly quickly. It was, you know, about a year, year and a half in terms of a plan. And I think they did a good job about bringing in a diversity of people with diverse concerns and in neighborhoods. And that's what's exciting to me about the plan. Often when you're working with the neighborhood associations, which serve a wonderful function in our city, it's focused on the city of Portland. So it's focused on the issues dealing with transportation, dealing with planning. And what's wonderful to me in terms of what they pulled together with the East Portland Action Plan is it's broader than that. It says everything is interdependent. The schools are interdependent, the social services. We need to look at the environmental issues, which, you know, BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, does with the city of Portland, but bring all those together in one place, and the parks, and bring it into one plan where we look at the interaction, and brought people to the table who were willing to do that. So it was, again, exciting. People came with, say, particular background or issues or concerns, but integrated it into a plan and said all of these elements are very important and they need to happen somewhat simultaneously. The concern for me with East Portland is that we've seen, as neighborhoods which have been traditionally disenfranchised and underserved, as they get service and they get support, then the people living in those neighborhoods can no longer afford to live in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I think for the KBOO listeners, and I've been a contributor for years and listened to KBOO, I'm hoping that there are people out there who will be alerted that this is time to start thinking creatively. And as we want to bring all these services and all these basic amenities to the people who have a very high percentage of low-income people in East Portland. How do we do that in a way that allows them to continue to live there as the community brings in the amenities that they're seeking?
And on top of that, actually, as you say, continue to live there, not be forced further out into other areas that will be starting from scratch. They also have maybe a lesser amount of infrastructure and services. So
exactly.
push right beyond the core of the very services that we all need.
Which is also when you look at Metro, mm-hmm. and we're bringing in Metro, and you're saying we want to keep those urban boundaries, and it's like, well, then we need to make places for people of all income levels to be able to live in Portland if we're going to keep those urban boundaries.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. If you are in the Gorge and in parts of East Portland and East County, you're listening at 91.9. In the Willamette Valley, Point South and North, it's 100.7. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott, myself, Celeste Carey, and our guest, Laura Wintergreen. And we're discussing the East Portland Action Plan. We welcome your phone calls. Feel free to give us a call. Talk about it, 231-8187. And especially if you live in East Portland, we'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Are you involved in it? How are you involved in it? What do you see as some of the issues that your community needs to tackle? And would you like to encourage other Portlanders, especially those in East Portland, to be a part? So do give us a call and engage with us. And to that end, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Laura, were I know that you're within the plan, they're addressing issues of livability. Were there any particular issues that kind of rose to the top and seemed to be some priority concerns that everyone shared? I know one of the issues, of course, we've talked about is school. So if there is going to be concerns with school, you know, are kids able to get to school? When you get to school, are they going to have language services, or is it going to be people who can help with English as second language classes, for example, things like that? But were there issues that kind of rose to the top?
Well, the issue, when I came in, it had transitioned from, it had been adopted as an action plan in February 2009, and so it had transitioned to now we have an independent group of people who've come together and said, okay, we have this action plan, and to some degree, I say you can drive a truck through it. You know, mm-hmm. you can find, if you care about something,
yes.
you can nail it to something in the action plan where you can come and take action. Mm-hmm. And right now, the East Portland Action Plan Group is basically a group of people. We had 26 members at the last meeting who, we call it a participatory democracy, mm-hmm. basically who shows up at the table, you say what you care about, mm-hmm. and then we do best as that we can as a group to support you in moving forward one of those action plan items and making East Portland what people said they wanted it to be. So with that sort of participatory democracy, one overwhelming sort of total agreement, and some members of the group are going to be going to speak with Mayor Sam Adams, is just around basic equity. And fairness.
That was my next question.
And that is their number one. When Mayor Adams was running for office, as one of our members, Katie Larcel, has called, you know, forward, is that he had said he was going to have all of his bureaus track where their spending went and mm-hmm. looking at the geographics and equity of that spending. Mm-hmm. And East Portland, we looked at the stimulus funds that were just spent. Yes. And Nick Sovey from Rose CDC brought that to the committee and tracked that. And while we have about 25% of the community, we have 1%, less than 1% of the stimulus funds were spent in East Portland.
Interesting.
So, again, looking at general fairness and equity, and the committee members are going to be speaking with the mayor to say what we want is we want to see that tracking, and we want you to work with us and your bureau, you know, chiefs, the directors of your bureaus, to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Particularly in a place or part of the city where we're talking about issues around economic justice, and the stimulus funds is supposed to encourage that.
Mm-hmm. And you're looking at
infrastructure, actually, yes. Exactly. And jobs.
And we have the uh-huh. you know, the least infrastructure. You know, the Southwest Hills in East Portland are seen as similar. The Southwest Hills, to some degree, I worked with the Safer Routes to Schools program. You have members who don't necessarily want to see sidewalks in their neighborhoods. And certainly on some of the local roads in East Portland, you have people. But I've not heard anyone say they don't want to see it on the arterials or the neighborhood collectors or mm-hmm. the main streets. And we don't have sidewalks there. We don't have basic ways for people to progress through the city without that single occupancy vehicle that many of the people out there can't afford. And much of the low-income housing that was built, say, along the Gateway Max line, people in those housings, as a very eloquent man, Moses Raines, said to me from, he works with the Burmese community, and he was explaining that members of that community, as new Americans, come with very limited monies for their first 6 months. And here they are living on the Max line, but they literally do not have a discretionary dollar to buy a ticket. And so if they step foot in that Max without that ticket, they're breaking the law.
Breaking the law.
And not understanding those systems. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so there are so many issues to be dealt with in East Portland in supporting people. And then even elderly housing. If improvements are made and you move towards that positive environment and people start buying houses, it'll be typical of what I saw in northeast Portland, where then the elderly population, the population that lived in East Portland rurally and has lived there for years, mm-hmm. then suddenly their house values go up and they can't afford their taxes. So how do we address these issues before it fully hits East Portland while we're trying to make the necessary improvements?
We do have a caller on board, so we'll go to our caller. And good morning, you're on the air.
Morning.
How are you doing?
I am so good. Thank you so much for taking my call. All right, yet another extremely important topic that is seldomly discussed. And you guys are right on the money again, as usual. Okay, here's my situation. All right, can we talk about the impact of racial profiling and funding? I understand that there was three Afro-American men who were terrorized and brutalized by the Portland police here. I don't know how long ago. I heard the story on like Joe Urisa's show, and there was a successful lawsuit that was filed, and these men were compensated for being terrorized. Fine, all right. The city is always crying the blues that they don't have any money to do this and to do that, but it seems to me that they have millions of dollars to spend on lawsuits for the Portland Police Bureau who are behaving in an inappropriate manner and who are getting slapped on their little hands, all right? And ultimately, it's costing the taxpayer millions and millions of dollars, right? James Chassie, for example, Multnomah County gave his family about $1 million, and the lawsuits are
okay. So LJ, let me kind of trim this down a little bit so that it fits into what we're talking about here with the action plan.
Yeah.
So what exactly is it that you want Laura to answer?
I want the public to know and for Laura to answer that there would be more money available to start programs if the police department behaved in a more appropriate way. That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Okay. Let's let Laura respond as much as she's able. Not quite her role, but
okay.
Well, I guess I hear more of a statement from you,
mm-hmm.
and I just would honor your, you know, perspective in your statement about this issue.
One of the issues that he touched upon is in terms of the diversity of the community, and you also talked upon in terms of the cultural and racial diversity. Now, that's something I gather that's something new in terms of communities coming together, some older communities who have lived there longer and some new, maybe new to this country, in terms of the diversity there. Does the action plan address those issues specifically, or what are things happening within the community to bring different culture, or to address the needs of different cultural and racial and ethnic communities.
Right.
The action plan does call that out in a number of places, and the desire to proactively and reinforce the multicultural nature that East Portland has become. In fact, talking everywhere from the economic center of the community, and do we want to be seen as the multicultural center mm-hmm. for the city of Portland, and how can we develop a economic sort of center with that in terms of a community center that we acknowledge and embrace and use to help people be able to make a living with the strengths that we have in terms of diversity now in East Portland that seems to be only growing, and again, as families move in. What the action plan also has done is we now have an event. We're hoping it'll be an annual event. It was called the East Portland Exposition event that happened in the summer.
Yes.
And there was a lot of dedication and a lot of work to making sure that that was a multicultural event and awareness. I was hired working with the East Portland Action Plan, and some of what my focus was for the first 2 months and will continue to be is to see that the action plan, people from various communities are aware of how they can join this effort. Everyone is welcome to the fourth Wednesday of the night to come to our office and meet and take on what is it they want to support, what do they want to make happen in the community, and then how we can work together to do that. And so I've done a lot of work in meeting with and talking with people from diverse cultures and things that have come out of that, which is of the 25-member community, we had 7 members from different cultures come to our last meeting. We've also had one of the priorities that was taken is we've now established a subcommittee that we're calling the Civics Subcommittee until it gets named differently. But what it came from was from Gloria Wiggins and El Programa
Espano. Yes.
Programa Espano. I always do it wrong. She came with something that they've done, and they get funded sometimes and they don't get funded other times, and saying civic involvement and civic development sometimes starts with the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And the basics when you're looking at immigrant refugee communities and Latino community specifically for her, but this resonated with people from the Russian-speaking communities, from the Burmese, from the Bhutanese, from the Rwandan, as I carried her idea forward, was let's start with what is criminal activity in this country. So people don't get caught up in that system. What's Measure 11? How do these things affect your life? Doing it through a sort of popular education of what questions do you have? We'll bring in the DA. We'll bring in a chief of police. You know, we'll bring people to talk with you, share this information, and then move to the next step of, okay, now, you know, is how does housing affect you? And looking at rental housing and possible home ownership issues. Then looking at issues of report cards. Many uh-huh. parents, that isn't what, you know, was normative for them. How do you read a report card? When do they come? You know, personally,
when do they come? How do I as a parent engage when this is a second language for me and a culture that I'm not fully understanding and conversing with, but my child is?
Exactly. And,
yes.
you know, I would have been that child stealing that report card if it wasn't uh-huh. looking so good for the mail. You know, that's just me.
Right.
But, you know, those basic things, and then how you communicate with the school and mm-hmm. what your mechanisms are, and sort of moving people through the this is your existence as a civic, you know, person in our civic society. And then how do you change what you don't like, or how do you engage in supporting what you like, and moving people on through that continuum of involvement at all levels. And that's very exciting to me. And so we developed a subcommittee to say, let's get together, let's define what some of those basics are, but know that they need to be led by people who speak the language of the people they're working with and have the cultural
yes.
understanding of that. How do we get everybody to come together to fund those things? How do we get Multnomah County, Metro, City of Portland, different bureaus come together to say, we're going to fund that type of series, and we're going to fund the people who have the connections already mm-hmm. to bring the people they know together to support them in that progression of civic involvement?
Now, we have two callers on board, and so I don't want to answer it yet, but I want to throw the question out there. I've done something similar with my job with regard to public safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I didn't hear you say, but it seems like it's implied in civics, is does it also really educate people as to what our governance process is and how to get involved? Or was that kind of like implied and you hope people caught that? Because I want people to catch it just in case, so that they know that we do give you the full spectrum of education that you need to really participate with that equity perspective that you mentioned.
And in the concept that they had from El Programa, Programa Hispano, is indeed, as it progressed from what are you encountering in your life, then how, what are the systems and where do you intersect with those systems and where can you have a say and how can you be involved? So it progresses to that. As she defined it, it was a six-week Saturday, 6 hours Saturday progression in terms of, and then what happens is, in having done this before in Gresham, they basically then have people going out into their communities. They become the community leaders, as in popular education, and they start telling their neighbors and their friends and their family, and that extends. And so they become the leaders in sharing this information and continue to be able to come back to, say, the people who led the workshop for information to continue to share with their community. But what we wanted to do was make this not a one-time thing, but say, okay, we're going to continue these culturally and language-specific communities and have it happen periodically. So you're re-educating, you're re-supporting, you're bringing in new people. We're looking at working with youth. So I'm really excited about that new subcommittee that just got formed last month. But in addition to that, part of what we did with a small grants program that we have is that was a specific program for the Latino community working on those issues through Programa Hispano. We did fund that as one of our small grants. So we had $23,500 that we were able to give in funding. And a number of the projects that we funded certainly had the elements of cultural working with specific cultural communities from the Tree Institute and various programs.
And for people who may not be familiar with the small grants program is administrated and available through your neighborhood coalition office.
And there is that one which is still open right now.
Yes,
so
they just started about 2 weeks ago.
Each neighborhood coalition has an open grant. But the city of Portland had allotted $500,000 to the East Portland Action Plan. And included in how they chose to spend that money was my time. And then also they did, amongst other things, a small grants program. And where they were giving, they're going to have two cycles, and one will start again in February. So please keep an eye out if you go on the EPNO, www.epno.org website. There'll be an update. We'll be have another $23,500 in grant funds to go out in March for East Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. Our guest this morning is Laura Wintergreen, who is the East Portland Action Plan advocate working out of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. We'll continue our discussion and go to our callers, but let me remind you that coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. The Moles ask, what's the best we can expect from Congress on health care, and where can we go from there? At 10, hear Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein speaks with the co-president of Friends of Family Farmers about how her organization is working to protect family farms and sustainable agriculture in Oregon. 11 on Health Watch, Deborah Merlin discusses her book, Victory Over ADHD, a holistic approach for helping children with attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And at 11:30, Mike Hoffman interviews storyteller and mythologist Michael Mead, who is coming to Portland to present a workshop on the soul of change. But right now, you're listening to More Talk Radio with Celeste Carey and myself, Cecil Prescott. Our guest is Laura Wintergreen. We're speaking this morning about the East Portland Action Plan. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. And we have a caller online who's been waiting for quite a while. So let's go to that caller. Good morning, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you for your patience. Oops.
Let's go to the
Please
next caller.
Please call again. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. This is Leah Monka. Good morning.
Good morning.
And this is John Bowman, right?
No, this is Celeste.
Oh, this is Celeste. Okay. I don't think I've ever called in before. Comment.
You're welcome.
In East County. I live on 152nd and Sandy Boulevard in one of those low-income complexes. I am a senior. And so the thing is, that I hear about, no sidewalks, no, our bus service out here runs every half hour, in spite of the fact that we have tons of low-income working people out here. We have no places for people to ride a bike. Some parts, but mostly it's on dirt. We have lots of people walking. We have lots of single women. We have a huge ethnic diversity out here.
Yes.
I've been attending for the last 2 years the neighborhood meetings off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that disturbs me and consistently disturbs me is the lack of diversity. I sit in this room with all these white faces and I'm going, excuse me, I live in a place of where people, I'm surrounded by people of color. Why am I not seeing them in these meetings? And so I'm really disturbed by this because we can't, anything we do will not succeed if we don't include everybody.
You're bringing up such a valuable point, and you know, one of the things that Laura and I share is we both work for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and what we're looking at is what are the barriers and the challenges to getting a broader participation. And it comes, the effort has to come not only from what her group is doing, what my group is doing, but finding new ways to work within the communities and the neighborhood associations themselves, because there's always that dynamic tension that keeps people out. As Laura said, civic engagement means something different to different cultures. But I'm going to defer to you.
Well, one of the things that I heard you talking about the meeting on the Wednesday, once a month on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
I have four different meetings I can go to on Wednesdays. Once a month.
Yes.
And so what I would like to have is I'd like to have an additional meeting because I can't get to all of them. But I am active in Peak Oil Transition Project. I'm one of the CERT people for Community Emergency Response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did all those things to participate in my community. But I have not found much connection. I started a tenants association here at our tenant's place.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm the lone person on the totem pole. You know, so it would, and I really want to connect with other people. And I have connected with some of the Asians, but Hispanic has been very much more difficult.
Well, Laura, can you give her your phone number and we can start there?
Well, I can do that, and then I did have a question, a mm-hmm. dialogue. But you're always welcome to call me at 503-823-4035.
Okay, 503-823-4035. And you're Chris?
I'm Lore, L-O-R-E.
L-O-R-E. Okay.
And we meet the fourth Wednesday of each month.
Uh-huh.
At 6:30 p.m., I give you food and dinner. We'll give you childcare, and if someone needs interpretation, we'll provide interpretation services.
Right.
We're in the process of translating some of our materials, and it's at 1017 Northeast 117th Avenue.
I know that's the neighborhood office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess I wanted to just address with you one of the issues that you raise is, you know, certainly seeing mostly white people in your neighborhood association, and then your own difficulty pulling together your tenants association and
right.
getting that civic involvement. And for me, as Celeste alluded to, the idea for us is, especially for some people who have always been left out of those processes, not invited in. What was exciting to me about the East Portland Action Plan is it has a door by which people can come in other than the standard transportation land use door that neighborhood associations, you know, look on, parks, transportation, land use.
Right.
But it opens it broader into social service and schools, and there's an integration amongst those things. And then the benefit in talking to me, finding out what your interest is, well, the East Portland Action Plan sort of full committee meets on that Wednesday. We have now, I think, five or six subcommittees, and those subcommittees set their own meeting times and places. And like one of them, I went with the bike subcommittee. You mentioned bikeways. We have a bike subcommittee that works both on organizing bike activities. They did a sacred spaces ride. They did a bakery ride. And then they also work on affecting policy and have three members that were involved with the bike master plan. They met in a local restaurant. And they met this last Thursday. So the subcommittees are really open to, you know, changing meetings and making their meetings. And most of our meetings, actually all of them at this point, are in the evenings.
Okay.
But except for our chairs meeting, and we meet during the day for our chairs because that's more convenient for them in preparation for our big meeting. But really do want to make this workable and to bring in people and then to learn from you as you're working, say, with your tenants committee. What lessons are you learning? What can we pick up from you and certainly be glad to share with you where we've developed some strengths in bringing people together?
Well, that's very heartening because I could probably make some of those other meetings easier than I can the Wednesday night meetings because I have so many. And they're important meetings to go to. I just, you know, it's difficult, so I have to make some hard choices. One of my major issues is food security because as someone who works with transition, I see the problem with food security. And so many people out here are on food stamps and go to the food bank, are single parents, low income, struggling women with kids. So food and, you know, we did have small gardens in our area, and over the last 2 years, they've taken them away. And what we need to do, one of the things we need to do across the board is get back to the gardens, get the gardens back.
Well, not just get back to the gardens, but there are farms out in that area. As I said, I lived out in East Portland most of the time I was here, and you've got farms that you need to support and protect because with zoning issues and development issues, you know, you're losing a lot of those local farmers right in our communities.
And that was one of the issues at the meeting the other night. I think it was Chris from the East County was there to talk to us about the Community Action Plan, Portland's, and how East County fits in that, and we're working on developing one, so I'll be a part of that.
Great.
But, I mean, we're in very serious trouble. I'm really involved in that, and people have no idea how close we are to a real problem here.
Well, and I have to say we had for our grants, I believe we had 3 or 4 grant applications for community gardens. And, and then actually a couple churches that were working. There's right now a grant out called the Soil and Water, East Multnomah County Soil and Water PIC grant. And that is a wonderful grant for potentially funding gardens. And they have $400,000, this grant round.
I actually partnered, well, not me personally, but a group that I work with, partnered with them in the heart of the city with Humboldt School. So this is a very stable group that you want to meet.
This is great because we have a lot of area out here that can be turned into garden. What we don't have is enough people to step up to the plate and say, you know, we're going to do this, and how are we going to do it, and then work on the strategy to do it so that when the landowners or the tenant or the management says no, we say no, and let's keep going. See, it's like that's just the next step to yes. You just keep going through the no's until you get the yes.
Well, caller, as we let you go, I want to suggest that you...
Thank you very much, guys.
Caller, as you go, use the idea of starting a garden as a way to talk to some of your tenants, your residents that live from, you know, from other countries, because that's something that everybody likes to do is garden.
That's true. That's
all right.
True.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Leah.
Bye-bye.
Lord, you mentioned the meeting on Wednesday, but also subcommittees. Could you state some of the subcommittees?
And there's the one that I mentioned was the Civic Subcommittee. There is an Economic Development Subcommittee that's been just established a month ago, and they're looking at the issues of economic development in the area, transitioning from a community of many new Americans, and how do you have standard position jobs? We don't really have retail centers, many. I mean, there are 2 or 3 in all of East Portland. So it's like, how do we develop entrepreneurial settings? And as I said, multicultural marketplaces, and how do we develop that for people as an entry level coming in, starting their own businesses, to looking at areas where there is industrialized land, and how can we bring in industry that can provide for living wage, family wage jobs, and how can we support and encourage that and have that support from the city of Portland? What we've talked about is often urban renewal has been the tool that has been used, and for many reasons. One, that tool sometimes has adverse effects that the community doesn't foresee and has happened. Number two, East Portland is the blighted of the blighted, unfortunately. We're so blighted that we can't make enough money in an urban renewal area to basically push economic development factors forward in additional housing. So one of the things, we have a member who joined the Main Streets Committee, And we're looking at trying to get using a different economic development tool of developing main streets in East Portland. So while we have subcommittees like the Economic Development Subcommittee, the Civic Subcommittee, we have the Communication Subcommittee that is focusing very much on how do we bring people in, because again, this is a participatory democracy. You have the support of our group behind you when you join the East Portland Action Plan. We're not there to ferret out and say, no, this isn't something good. If it's in the plan and you want to do it, we want to support you. So we either want to support you by forming a subcommittee or you as an individual taking a position on behalf of the East Portland Action Plan. There's a lot of movement and authority we give to the individuals who want to be involved. So the other subcommittees that we have the bike subcommittee, and again, have done a lot of work both activity-wise and then looking at planning and concerns. When you look at the recent release of the economic development strategy for the city of Portland, they talk a lot about bikes in there. They talk about that type of infrastructure, and they talk about that type of industry that comes from green industry. Well, let's bring that out to East Portland. So we see so many things end up interfacing, even without the intention. So that's exciting. And those are, I think, believe that those are currently, oh, we have the TGM Powell Boulevard is going to be doing a transportation growth management project. And that hasn't, we donated, the East Portland Action Plan donated $50,000 in funding. That got matched with another $330,000 in funding to assess Powell Boulevard, where sort of the in-between where it hasn't been looked at yet or developed between Gresham and the city of Portland. So this group is going to be doing that. And what they said was they wanted to get a head start on it. The city isn't quite ready to jump into that until January. And they're going to have their first meeting tonight to talk about it and bringing together business owners along the way, people who live in that area, as well as school districts. You have Centennial School District that makes 400 and I think it's 420 passes in a specific point on Powell Boulevard every day. They have an investment with what's done with that road. And then the question is, what do we do with that road that is community-based? There are some concerns of high-capacity transit is something that Metro put Powell Boulevard on the top. One of two, Barber Boulevard and Powell Boulevard, are now on the top of their list for that. And that might be a wonderful solution. Some of the concern is, though, often when you go to MAX or bus rapid transit, you're looking at getting through the community as opposed to around the community.
Right. Yeah.
So people are saying, well, what about streetcar or what? You know, we don't necessarily, we have people who just need to get around. That's what biking looks like in East Portland. Very similar to my experience in Northeast North Portland. You have some people who use the lanes, the bike lanes, and there are quite a few bike lanes. I have to honor the city of Portland put in quite a few bike lanes in East Portland, more miles of bike lanes than anywhere else, any other area in the city. But we don't have the bike boulevards. And the reality is when I go out of my office, I'm seeing all those people. And unfortunately, we have the lowest usage of the helmets and lights.
Yes.
And so we have a lot of people out there riding their bikes to get around their community, not through and out of their community. And so the question for the Powell Boulevard Transportation Growth Committee, subcommittee, is what do we want to see the function of this road serve? And so we have those types of committees. We funded 122nd Avenue. That was funded with some of our funds to do a study of that. And there you have a five-lane road, and it's just like people, there are no sidewalks in areas of it, and yet it's a major arterial. And how do people, and that is where we do have some stores that people might go to. You don't have the traditional 20-minute neighborhood in East Portland. And yet crossing 122nd is extremely difficult for a person.
Yes.
So looking at what types of improvements do we want to see there, again, there's the, it's the perfect example of someone building a housing project that serves, not a housing project, building housing that serves, it's independent private housing that serves many low-income people because of the cost of living there, and yet no common areas for these families, no play areas for these children, and they're right on 122nd, which isn't a road you send your children out to go find a park from. So looking at how do we build that community in a positive way, and the East Portland Action Plan Group says, please come be involved. Please name it. We'll support you. If you'll work on it, you'll have our support. And that's it. We're not going to do it for you. Just as the woman who just spoke, Leah, said, you know, people do have to step up. And for some people who haven't had that opportunity to feel that they have that authority because they've been disenfranchised in this community, their voices haven't been heard before. I give an example of when I worked doing community involvement in Northeast Portland, and a gentleman was going to be moving from there. And I was talking with him about the urban renewal at the time and saying, we need your voice. And he was an African-American father. And he said, we don't want to see gentrification. We don't want to see the displacement. You know, the history has been that's what's happened, and we really don't want to see that replicated. And he said, well, it's historically appropriate for my people. We live where you let us live. And so wasn't willing to step up and get involved because of that just feeling of hopelessness. And for me, really wanting people to come together and say, no, we can. And I think a good example, and nobody organized it per se. And whether it was right or wrong or somebody would agree with it or not, when the stadium coming out to Lentz Park, the baseball stadium, people stood up and just said no. And boy, that was going to go in a real different direction than it went. Yes. But because people came together and had their voice and stood up and said very loudly what was acceptable to them, that changed drastically. The plan for that, you know, was a 180-degree change. So I'm saying, people, we can do it. But you have to do what Leah said, is you have to do it. And if when you encounter a barrier, you have to say, how do I get around that? And what can I adjust? And how do I approach it again? And we really want to do that together through the East Portland Action Plan.
Remind us again about people, how they might contact you and become involved.
Okay. Again, my number is 503-823-4035, 823-4035. My email, it's a general city email. It's a long one. It's my name, L-O-R-E dot Wintergreen, as it sounds, W-I-N-T-E-R-G-R-E-E-N, @ C-I dot Portland dot O-R. .us. And I have to say, it wasn't too many years ago when somebody gave me an email address and said .dot. I was writing the word D-O-T. So so if you're just learning computers, the .dot is the period.
That's right. And we do have another caller here online, and we'll go to that call.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting.
Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to ask this. I don't know whether it's healthy energy. Since we're probably going to have ongoing war, and we have this ugly, horrible economic, financial problems over our head, et cetera, the Housing Authority of Portland or whatever, do they own any apartments or property where they put... residents in, or, you know, housing authority clients in? Does anyone know?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. That's what they do. That's their business.
They have that, and then Section 8 housing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair amount of that is in East Portland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent.
One of the issues she raised in passing is in terms of housing, and you raised it also in terms of how housing is established, where it goes up, and
hopefully the quality of it.
Well, and that's an issue. You had asked what a common issue for people at the table has been. And what we've talked about is setting standards. Other parts of the city have design standards. And for East Portland, that hasn't really been formalized in place. And the group really wants to do that. And it isn't a matter of trying to set standards to keep people out or keep it, you know, have a pearl housing. It's a matter of what are the standards. They've seen wonderful things through, say, Rose CDC, Human Solutions. Housing that actually serves the community that's there, that supports the community that's there, that has support staff for that community, has common meeting areas, has play areas, you know, areas where they can have the tenant association meetings. That type of housing is seen as very positive in East Portland. And has been very much embraced and appreciating the standards that housing has been built. So it's a matter of how do we continue to support that. there are independent, you know, and again, we live in a capitalist society. There are people who have bought a lot of property out in East Portland, and they're amassing large parcels of property. And they're not building on it right now. This is not the time or place in this economy to do that. But they're holding that. And they're holding that. And that's where the concern is, that as improvements happen and then make it viable for them to build housing at a higher cost level where people with more money will be willing to move in, that's a fine thing. And having that type of integration of housing, having all levels of market housing, is a very positive thing for a community. I don't know if anybody would disagree with me, but I've been told, you know, that's pretty much a standard, and we all understand having that integration of all levels of housing is better than having sort of one. All the poor people live here and all the rich people live here. Right. You know, how do we bring all that together and have everyone living and supporting each other mutually and having then all the amenities for everyone? But the fear is, will it push people out? Mm-hmm. Do we let people who perhaps aren't going to become wealthy or independently wealthy live in Portland? And at this point, many of the families and many low-income families are living in East Portland. And do we drive them out as we make the improvements that they're asking for and that people are saying they need to be a sense of community? Unfortunately, many of the people who've been displaced, and our African-American community is growing in East Portland. Many of the people, as one of my coworkers went door to door in the Wilkes neighborhood, found that people who were living there would say, well, I don't really live here. He'd say, but you're answering the door. And it's like, well, but my community is in Northeast Portland. And it's like, well, are you able with transit to get there very often? No. Is it difficult for you to get the services you need? Well, yeah, because I can't afford the bus ticket. The buses run less frequently. No, I don't get over there, but I don't really live here. And so it's even just building that sense of, this is your community now. How do we support you to embrace this as your community and create that sense of community?
We have little time, but that opens a door, a conversation, because of people who have been forced to move into a new part of town. How do they become familiar, comfortable, be able to claim that as their neighborhood?
Exactly. To share that with the already established people.
And also to be able to not have the attitude as, oh, we're going to be pushed around again at another time. But that's part of your work, part of the East Action Portland plan. And again, for people who are interested, contact information one more time.
Laura Wintergreen, laura.wintergreen@ci.portland.or.us or 503-823-4035.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And we know that this is going to be an ongoing story, that there will be still more activities, more implementation of some of the components, maybe conversations with other partners. But if you live in East Portland, please get involved and be part of this action plan so that you can have a spot and put down roots in a community and make it your own. This has been More Talk Radio here on Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for more news information that you can use and enjoy here on Your Community Connection, KBOO.